Welcome to episode 4 of the Conversations on Death podcast. My name is Lorena and I'm your host for the Conversations on Death podcast. Death is the one thing we all have in common, yet it's one of the most taboo subjects in our culture. So I invite you, dear deathling, to join my guests and I as we dive deep into everything death related, and in the process, learn about the many lessons death has to teach us, the living. Welcome back, everybody. On today's episode, I talked to Bree Martell, who's a death doula. And this has been one of the most interesting conversations I've had on the podcast so far. And I feel like I say that about every podcast episode I post, but what can I do? Not my fault. I talk to amazing, awesome people on this podcast, you know? So let me tell you a little bit about Bree. She's a death doula, as I mentioned earlier, a death educator and a holistic living advocate, bringing the revolution of death to the forefront of people's minds. So with a background in mental health, mindfulness, and a passion for bridging international cultures, she binds wisdom and knowledge to deepen the doors of perception around death culture. And that's a mouthful. You're probably like, what does she even mean? Deepen the doors of perception. We will get into it, and it's so awesome. One of my favorite things about Bree is that she not only explores the direct connection to death that most death doulas explore, you know, such as like bedside support, advanced care planning, legalities when it comes to getting ready for dying and such, but she also looks at death from the subtle realm. So what that means, as she described it, she kind of views herself as an energetic gatekeeper between the human realm and the beyond. So opening people to the deeper dimensions of death and how that can actually empower their human lives while they live. So on today's episode, we talk about how her experience was helping her grandma with the dying process. We look at the deeper dimensions of death rather than just what we're used to seeing with our five senses, but kind of what lies beyond that and beyond what human brains can understand in this reality. Such as, for example, we touch on deathbed visions of dead relatives and other kind of beings that people experience when they're in the dying process and what those things mean or how we can understand them. We talk about the vibrational frequencies changing throughout the dying process and what her experience is like being a death doula and kind of bridging the physical and the spirit world together. We also look at grief and we talk about grief holistically and working with transformational grief and what her experience has been like, such as including ceremony and ritual into the holistic transformation of grief, which is very interesting because I've never heard anyone use holistic when it comes to grief, and I'm all about holistic and looking at every aspect of the human condition, not just little parts of it. So I'm all about it. And then lastly, we touched on grief during COVID-19 because, I mean, who would we be as a society and just, you know, what would this podcast be if I didn't talk about COVID-19 since it's bringing up all these feelings and emotions and thoughts for everybody. So I'll leave you with Bree and I as we discuss all of these fascinating topics, and I hope you enjoy today's podcast. Thank you for wanting to do this today. So tell me a little bit about what you do and how you got to doing it.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. So I work as a death doula, a holistic grief guide, and sort of all things holistic living in terms of death care. So I got into it. That's a bit of a loaded question. I always had this curiosity for death. I remember the first time I really pondered it, I was about 8 years old. And I just remember sobbing, like out of nowhere. We were unpacking Christmas ornaments or something really random. And I just started sobbing. And this huge, like a bag of bricks, it just hit me that we are all going to die. like wow. myself and my family. And it was just like this huge realization that, holy shit, this is a real thing. And I don't know anything about it. But being 8 years old, I didn't, you know, I asked my mom and she was really taken back and confused and didn't necessarily know how to approach it. Mm-hmm. And I asked a couple people, but I wasn't necessarily getting the answers that felt right. So I just sort of pushed it in and, you know, sucked it up and just continued living. And I feel very lucky that I've not necessarily been hit with an abundance of death in my life. You know, I think a lot of death doulas come into this work because they've lost everyone that they've ever loved. And I feel very, very lucky to not come from that side of it. But I do remember, you know, I had some aunts and uncles who had passed away, some grandparents that had passed away. And I just remember having this sense of this culture doesn't make sense to me. You know, going to a Catholic funeral for someone who didn't necessarily practice that faith or religion sort of just felt like a forced fallback because there wasn't necessarily alternatives. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of had this deeper curiosity throughout, you know, my teenage years and my early adulthood. And then I really came into it when I was working for a mental health unit at one point. And my colleague who I sat beside every single day, she was this really beautiful older woman. And she was such a quirky character. But we really developed this really beautiful bond. And it was mostly around holding space for the end of life process, in a sense. And it was very informal, but it was very much around sharing questions like, you know, what is life? What is love? What is God? What is like all of these really big, beautiful life questions that people don't necessarily sit and hold space for all the time. And then through, you know, I was leaving the job, I was leaving the country, and there was, you know, a few things overlapping. And she ended up, she said, I remember when I was leaving, we had a going away party for me, and she hugged me and she looked me in the eyes, like dead set in the eyes. And I just had this really weird internal feeling of what is she doing? Like she has something, you know? And she was like, I'll see you when I see you, but thank you.
Oh like, God.
That seems creepy, but okay.
Yeah.
So I left for a couple weeks and came back. And as it was the day I was leaving the country, I got a phone call and she dropped dead that day. She had a heart attack and then a stroke and she was just gone with it. And it was interesting because her and I had several conversations around, you know, her life path and where she was going. And when I reflected on a lot of conversations that we had, it almost felt obvious that that was the direction it was going to, in a sense.
Like she knew.
Yeah.
Like well, obviously it seemed like she knew when she.
Like she knew, like subconsciously you. She knew. Like yeah. It wasn't necessarily a longing to die, but it was almost like there was something inside of her that felt unfinished. And I don't know, it was almost like she had accepted a certain fate and was like, okay, I accept this and I'm ready to go.
Mm.
Which was really interesting. And then I kind of kept that in my back pocket. And about 4 or 5 months later, I was living in Asia at the time and I was working in a meditation retreat and like doing yoga and stuff. So my meditation practice at the time was pretty strong. You know, I was meditating more than I had in most other aspects of my life. And I kept getting this really, really strange yet intuitive pull that my grandma needed help dying.
Your grandma?
Yeah, my grandma.
Okay.
Which again, it felt strange at the time.
Right.
And you know, I kept having people come and be like, well, how long are you going to be here? Like, how long are you intending to stay in Asia? And my reply was always very clear cut and like not trying to hide behind it. But I kept just saying, I think I need to go help my grandma die.
Mm.
And I'd get the strangest looks. And and it was hard to explain because it didn't even feel like my mind was trying to like share that. Mm-hmm. It was like something deep within me was just blurting it out.
Yes,
like,
I understand.
I need to go help her. Like,
yeah.
So, So that's kind of how I got into the work. I ended up going home and I did end up helping my grandmother die. And then it kind of just snowballed. I realized that it was something that I was interested in, and that sounded, or that felt like a really natural approach to what I was doing. And I had really different backgrounds from most other death doulas, more from the holistic side than from the legalities and the paperwork and all that stuff. So it's something that I decided to pursue. And now here we are. That's how I spend most of my days, is just sharing what current death culture looks like and how far we've come from, you know, a couple hundred years ago, and how taboo it's become, and how almost dirty and harsh it's become to speak about. And I kind of just try and break through those walls and share the beauty that death can be.
The beauty that death can be. Yes. I'm curious, how did you help your grandma die? Like, just you talked to her, or was it more hands-on with all the paperwork and all the stuff?
Yeah. So I, again, like I said, I was in Asia. So I booked a flight and flew back. It was a really short, you know, I think I booked a flight and flew back within 2 weeks or something. So I flew back. I live in Canada. So I flew to Canada, and she was living in a nursing home at the time. And so I just walked into the nursing home one day and surprised her, and, you know, she freaked out and was so excited to see me. And I sat down and basically just said, you know, "Hey, Grandma, you know, I love you. And so I ask you these questions out of complete love, but why are you still here?" And it was just a really honest question. And she just burst into tears. And she's like, "I've been waiting for someone to ask me this for years, but
wow.
Like nobody wants to speak of death. You know, no one wants to share these topics and these really, really in-depth, vulnerable conversations." And no offense to, again, this isn't necessarily a negative to my family per se. But people are so busy, you know, when you have a 9-to-5 job and you have children who go to dance and go to soccer and dogs that need to be fed. Speaking of the fact that your mother is still alive isn't necessarily at the top of your priority list. So it was something that she hadn't necessarily spoken to with anyone. It was something that she, I think, wanted to speak, but almost didn't know how to initiate. So when I came in and just asked her full out, "Grandma, why are you still here?" she was really taken back, but it opened a pool of so many beautiful conversations. And so I ended up staying in Canada for 6 weeks at that point. And I would go every few days and I would just sit and we would have tea and we would talk about, like, so many beautiful, beautiful stories. I'm actually so grateful for that time period, because we were able to speak about, you know, love and life and death. And, you know, she was Christian, so, like, her belief system and how she saw God and how she viewed the world. And it was really just a space for her to almost review her life and almost just come to, like, an energetic acceptance of what she had lived within this human lifetime. And we spoke about regrets, and we spoke about all of the things she would have done differently, all of the things that she saw for our generation and how she saw the future of the world. And really, I just felt like I was holding space for her to go through her own mental patterns. It's almost like these questions wouldn't have necessarily been explored within her own mind if they weren't properly, like, "Let's sit down and have tea and have this conversation," you know?
Right.
It's easy for big life questions to kind of get pushed to the side, but when there's an external person forcing them to really expel them from your body.
Right.
That's something I really like looking at too, is, you know, if we look at the subtle energetic body, you know, feelings and emotions and all of these things that we feel, they're actual physical, tangible things. Like, they are chemical releases that the body feels, that if we don't allow that energy out of our system, whether it's through movement or speaking or a way that actually transforms that energy, it just kind of gets bottled up inside of us and stagnant. And that's why so much people have so much tension around death, because there's so much energy inside of them that they can't release. And so it was really just allowing space for her to release a lot of things around her life. And then we ended up talking about stuff like this. It was an ongoing 6-week conversation. And then at one point, I again intuitively just had this, okay, it's time to go. It's time to leave for me, not for her. But so I booked flights and I was leaving. So I went in and I said, Grandma, I have to tell you something. I booked flights and I'm leaving in 2 weeks. And she was like, right, okay. Like, let's get down to business. And she like poured us a cup of tea and sat down and we had our last conversation. And at the end of it, she said, okay, do you have any more questions? Like, do you have anything else to say or share? And I said, no. And I asked her the same question and she said, no. And we both just looked at each other. And it was this really beautiful moment of like, this relationship is so complete. There's so much love. There's so much compassion shared both ways. And I have so much acceptance for everything that this woman has brought to my life and everything that she has been through. And it was just a really deep understanding of this. I think this might be it. And so she hugged me and it was such a beautiful hug too. And I left. And then that evening she called 911 on herself and she pulled the dress that she wanted to be buried in and put it next to her bed. And she got pulled to the emergency room and she went into a coma about 2 days later and died, I think, within 5 days of being in the hospital.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's so crazy. That's such a beautiful story. I don't know. It has so many layers. Like, that's such a gift to have been able to talk to your grandma about all these important questions that we really don't ever talk about, unfortunately. So were you able to like record some of her answers or like share them with your family in any way, or was it more of a private conversation that she had with you?
Yeah, it was very much a private conversation. Mm-hmm. I just consider myself a private person. Mm-hmm. I have considered myself a private person for a long time. Only in the last couple months have I actually even, you know, stepped into the whole social media world and started sharing the way I see things. But So most of my family, I would say none of my family really knows any of this about this story with my grandmother.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Okay.
I do actually have one letter. Again, I was living abroad, so I used to send like letters. Like, I mean, you know, the older generation, they're not connected to technology.
Yeah.
So I used to write her letters and we'd be like pen pal back and forth. So I do have a couple letters, and at her funeral, I actually shared a letter that she wrote around how she met my grandfather. Mm. And it was really just a beautiful little love story that no one thinks to ask. You don't really think to ask people that. So I shared that and everyone freaked out. I was like, oh my God, that was so beautiful.
Yeah.
I was like, if you only knew.
Right. Like all the other stuff I know. That's so beautiful. When I was, I don't know, maybe like 5-6 years ago, I'm from Argentina. So I went back to Argentina and it just so happened that like 2 days before I got there, my grandpa died. So I helped my grandma through the grieving process and like all that crap. And we were cleaning stuff out. And then I found like 6 or 7 of her journals from when she was like in her 20s and had met my grandpa. So like the entire story of meeting him and dating him and stuff up until maybe she had her first kid is there. And it was so fascinating to read. Like, it was crazy because it did not seem like my grandma, like the grandma I knew now and who she was when she was 20. Like, wow. And it just reminded me of that.
That's wild. No, and I think that's why it's so important to have these conversations. And I think, you know, like a lot of end-of-life doulas will say, you know, we have to have these conversations of end-of-life care planning and all of those things. I do not by any means want to belittle because, I mean, I work in that field. That's a huge passion I have, is the end-of-life caring. But I think there's more to that. And it's not just looking at this dying person, it's looking at this person who is dying. You know, like what comes first? Are they dying or are they still a person? And it's looking at that person themselves in, they've had a whole life. They have all of this knowledge and all of this wisdom to share. And And it's really taking like the human aspect to it mm-hmm. and holding space for that side. And even, you know, there's similarly this, like this coworker I had, we sat next to each other for almost 2 years and it was the same thing, but it was, she was a Chinese New Zealand woman. She was such a character and she had so many interesting like cultural quirks that no other person in the world would have seen the way she does. And I think that's the important part of looking at the dying process and really holding space for that dying process, is that it's not just about the dying process. It's about all of life that has been experienced and focusing on the entire lifespan instead of just those last, you know, 2 weeks or 2 months or whatever, however long.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm so on board with that. That it's kind of the reason why I kind of started thinking of doing originally it wasn't the podcast idea. Originally it was maybe a book, but I really wanted to capture people's life stories and knowledge and things that they wanted to share and leave with the world after they were gone. Cause I think that's so important. People have come from all different life paths, you know, and we all learn different lessons throughout our lives. And it's such a shame that no one is really asking these important questions. That's why I was asking whether, you know, you kind of like recorded any of this. Obviously, there were aspects that were personal, but in terms of, you know, if there were any regrets or just that kind of stuff, like I'm so interested in that. I just want to know everybody's life story, you know? So I've thought of, I don't know, going into a nursing home. I don't know, just creating something around that because I really want to capture that. I don't know where it's going to go, but I'm so passionate about it. So it's great that we're talking about this.
Do you know Humans of New York?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I've had this idea of doing like Humans of Nursing Homes or something like this, or like Humans of Palliative Care or something.
I want to cry. Yes.
Yeah.
I love it.
It's so important. And I think the thing with, you know, end of life is, and so often when people are facing end of life, there's this really weird, and I know this has been shared 100 times over, but there'll be the person who's dying, and then there'll be the family, and they'll be in separate rooms, and then they'll hire like a doctor or someone will come in, and the family will say, you know, don't tell so-and-so that, you know, she's dying, this is the end, but she doesn't know. And then they'll go to the person, to the patient, and the patient will say, don't tell my family I'm dying. And they both really need to speak about it, but they don't want to speak about it to each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that it just creates, yeah, so many boundaries within, mm-hmm. boundaries within boundaries. One thing I found really interesting actually in those lines was, so when I was a teenager, my grandfather died. And he died of Alzheimer's. So he was, you know, sick for a long time, and slowly, I think it took about 8 years for him to fully, you know, he didn't speak English. He didn't mm-hmm. speak Dutch, which was his native language. He knew nobody's name. Mm. And I remember one of the last times I saw him, you know, in like a diaper and couldn't feed himself, had no idea about any language. And he would look at me and my mother, his daughter. And it was just like a complete blank mind. But then as soon as he saw an animal, at the time I had a dog at the time, and we used to bring him to the nursing home to visit. And as soon as he saw the dog, like full English came back. He knew the dog's name. He could look at us completely blank and then just look down to the dog and be like, oh, hello, Benji. Like, how are you doing today? And there was, I think that's where part of my fascination came in, because it was like, you know, no one looks at the deeper dimensions to death. And again, perceiving our reality in a different understanding beyond just our 5 senses. Mm-hmm. And so when someone is approaching end of life, it's almost like they're bridging into the beyond, and they're bridging into what the human mind can no longer understand. And I feel like that's almost where a lot of the disconnect comes from between patients and family and end of life is, I know this for a fact, this was something my grandmother shared with me, is she didn't like speaking about the fact that she was dying with the family as much as she wanted to, because they would come out with comments like, oh, you're just crazy, or like, mm-hmm. oh, you're just seeing things, or oh, you're just whatever. Mm. But the reality of it was she was actually in this state where she was seeing her husband who had died 30 years prior. Mm-hmm. She was seeing her mother who had died 40 years prior. Mm-hmm. She was seeing into, you know, this quote unquote spirit world that a lot of people don't believe in. And actually that just causes a lot of fear to a lot of people because it challenges a lot of the perceptions of their own reality. You know, when you start challenging factual things outside of the construct of what your mind can understand, that scares people because they're like, mm-hmm. shit, what else is real? You know?
Yeah.
So I know when my grandmother was dying, that was a really interesting thing to look at. Was she was seeing, you know, she was like, I see this big yellow bird in my room. And like my mind, I jumped to Sesame Street. I'm like, I don't know what that means. But that's great. Like, if you see that, I don't think you're crazy. I 100% believe you. You're just seeing into vibrational spaces that I'm in, you know, you're losing the mind and you're losing the physical body. And so I'm not saying what is and isn't right. Mm-hmm. I'm just in space for it all. Mm-hmm. And I think that's another thing that almost separates families is people don't know how to hold space for things that they think is nuts. Or that they don't agree with. So it's just a really interesting, it's an interesting space to step into where you just have to sort of agree and like acknowledge everything that is happening, even if you have no idea what the hell is happening.
Right. Absolutely. Even with that, I tend to kind of look at the world and the universe now in terms of like vibration and, frequencies. So I'm sure you've heard the analogy of like tuning into a different radio station. So it's like, you know, 98.7 still exists if I'm listening to 93.3, but you know, I can't listen to it because I'm not tuned in. So it's the same sort of thing. And when you break it down like that, it sounds very scientific. To me, they're both of the same thing, but people like to freaking put things into boxes. Like, no, they cannot mix. Like, they have to be separate, but they don't really have to, you know. It really takes someone just stepping out of like their day-to-day thoughts and how they've always viewed the world and really being like, okay, well, maybe this is a possibility, you know. To me, it's mind-blowing that people don't see it that way, but I understand because I mean, for a long time I didn't either. And even now, it's really weird, but my entire life, I've always wanted to see a ghost or whatever, but I just never have. So all these people around me have had these experiences around it, but not me. So for example, when my grandpa died, my other grandpa, not the one that I mentioned earlier, I used to live in Tampa with my parents, and apparently they both had experiences with them like right after his death. So one time, the same night that he died, my dad woke up and apparently my grandpa was like outside this glass door that we had and just like looked at him and smiled. He was just kind of like checking up on us. And then during the time that they were doing like his funeral and all that, my mom heard him talking to me in my room, but I was asleep. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, why can't I see any of this? Like, really, I had to be asleep when he came to talk to me. But like, yeah, my entire life, I just always wanted to experience it. It's like this longing. I don't know why. So this is originally how I got interested in death, through like the paranormal side of it. And then it just expanded over time. But I don't know what it is. And it kind of pisses me off that I'm never able to experience any of it. It's like the people who don't want to see it. And then the people who do, don't. It's such a weird thing, but I think it's such a this whole aspect of people seeing things when they're about to cross over kind of explains to me this idea of tuning into, like, slowly tuning into a different frequency. And the way we visually and perceptually experience things here could be totally, it's just like our interpretation, you know, like we see the color yellow, but yeah, like in another, yeah,
or even the same.
Right. Exactly. So yeah. Why question it? It's just like, okay, yeah, maybe she's seeing a yellow bird. Maybe it's something totally different when she crosses over, but there is something to acknowledge there. And no one talks about it.
The way I like, I similar to your radio analogy, I like looking at it as, you know, if you're in a small plane mm-hmm. and, you know, the propellers, when you're on the runway, they're just propellers and you can see that there's three of them. But then as you start to accelerate, they start going so fast. And then when you actually get in the air, you can't even see it because it's going so quick that they just completely eliminate themselves. So it's kind of the same thing. Like when someone is approaching death, their vibration is changing so drastically that they're just slowing down or speeding up, depending on how you see it.
Yeah.
But they're just slowing their own bodies down that they can actually see through vibrational spaces that are too fast or too slow for our own third dimensional reality.
Wow. Yeah.
There's actually several really beautiful stories. One of them was this woman who she was actually, and my grandmother has a similar story too, but this woman's story is really beautiful, so I'll share it. She was, again, in the hospital the last few days of her life, and she kept saying, I need to meet George, like at 4 o'clock. And none of the doctors understood what that meant, but she's like, I need to meet George on the train at 4 o'clock. And it was the only thing that she was saying. And they thought, again, they were like, oh, she's, you know, she's going crazy.
Losing her mind, yeah.
But then it ended up that at like 3:45 or something, she went into this huge state of, the doctors were freaking out. And she went into this, like, I don't even know what kind of state it was, but she just, her body basically completely changed in like an instant. And at 4 o'clock exactly, she died. And so if you look at it in the sense of, you know, if she's departing or if she's crossing over, oftentimes, I would say like at least half the time when someone is dying, there's some kind of correlation with the spirit side or with like a different dimensional species that's trying to help them cross over. Mm-hmm. And so I think subconsciously people know this. People know that they're dying or people know that they're being helped to actually leave this body more so than they'll care to admit. And I think that it's really beautiful having, you know, there's a huge, huge change to the death care system happening right now, which I'm so excited about and so excited to be a part of. But it's important to start having the ancient ways of death nesting come in and be a more popular thing to have. In the sense of, if someone has a family that doesn't necessarily believe in all of these other ways of thinking, all of these like vibrational states, and they look at someone and say, oh, you're just a little bit crazy. We love you anyways, but you're just a little bit crazy. That's great. But if you then have a patient who is somewhat communicating with the spirit world and no one to like help them not think they're crazy or no medium in between the spirit world, that often causes a lot of disease in the body. Like it causes a lot of confusion and anxiety. Mm-hmm. And that's why I love this whole new wave of death doula work that's coming through, is because a lot of it is coming through almost like the ancient death doula work, where it was being that middle ground of the physical world and the spirit world and really just merging those together. And it's such a simple holding of space, but it's really just allowing the intuitive feelings to come through and allowing yourself to just like be a channel and hold that space for what that person is experiencing. And I know for my grandma, that was exactly what it was, is she just needed that middle buffer between the spirit realm and the human realm and someone who could kind of connect with both sides.
So when someone hires you, what does the process look like, or does it depend on their needs? I'm just curious as to how you integrate this aspect into the usual death doula work.
The usual. I think the usual would need to be dissected a little bit. But basically, I think, and even a lot of death doulas that I know, especially in this area, everyone is coming at it from such a different way. Mm-hmm. You know, some people really love the legality side, the paperwork side. Some people love the funeral planning side or the advanced care planning, all of which are such necessary aspects. I think that they're all equally as important. The way I come at it is, again, it's very different for all patience. It's very different for all families and cultural understandings and perceived realities. So for the last, I've been away for the last 5 years, and that's really been an interesting exploration of cultural death. Like I've lived in Bali where they would have like Hindu funerals, and that they would just cut down all of these like wires and have massive parades down the road. And, you know, so being there for the cultural aspects of that was so interesting. You know, being at a New Zealand Māori ceremony where they like fling water with these like beautiful ferns all across, you know, all of these different ways. So the last many years has just been sort of absorbing pieces of knowledge from all these different cultures, mm-hmm. and now trying to channel it into helping people fill the spaces that they don't necessarily know how to deal with. So at the moment I'm focusing more on the grief side than the actual hands-on end of life stuff. Mm-hmm. So also because of COVID, that's not necessarily the easiest thing to approach. But when I'm working with clients on the grief side, it's really looking at the transformational grief. Because if you just have grief and you're looking at it and trying to, you know, heal it, that's great. But that doesn't necessarily get you many places. Mm-hmm. I think all of life is such a holistic thing that just to look at one aspect of grief doesn't make any sense. So a lot of the work that I've been doing has been looking at holistic grief and looking at, like I said earlier, it's actually transforming energy. So rather than just saying, I have this grief, I'm going to move through it, it's like, I have this grief, I'm going to sit with it, and I'm going to dissect it into the aspects. I work with 4 holistic pillars. So it's dissecting that into the 4 pillars of what a holistic lifestyle looks at. And it's separating what the mind wants, what the body is telling you, what the heart is telling you, and then the spiritual aspect that comes on the side. And it's like, because oftentimes grief will just contradict itself because your mind and your heart are telling you completely different things. Mm-hmm. And then the spirit world and your body are telling you completely different things. So being able to dissect that into 4 categories and then try and like, you know, individually look at all of those and sit with all of those and try and like have this level of self-awareness that you can actually move through them and actually transform that energy into a more aligned state of being where you're not just mm-hmm. ignoring certain emotions, but you're actually like working through them and building yourself up to a state of contentment and then taking those 4 categories and putting them back together. Okay. That was a mouthful, but I hope that made sense.
No, it does. It does. But now I'm just, I don't know. I like the details. So what are the tools that you use to get to that? Like, do you use meditation, mindfulness? I don't know.
Yeah. So again, with every person, it's very mm-hmm. different. Like I have one person at the moment where she's like, just give me all of the books. And I'm like, okay. She's like, I'm a big reader. So again, grief is one of those things where it's such a, and again, I also don't think that holistic, like transforming your grief holistically is necessarily for everyone because people's minds work in so many different ways. The way I do it is very specific based on each individual person I work with. Sometimes it's through, oftentimes, most times, I will put meditation in there. Mm-hmm. All time meditation, let's not lie. But it really looks at, you know, moving the body and like what movements actually work for you. Do you need to like move through a really slow yoga class to move all of that energy around? Or do you need to attend a really intense kickboxing and like kick your anger out? Do you need an ecstatic dance ceremony? Like, what do you need specifically? And how can we try on like 5 different gloves to see which one fits you best? We also go into like journal prompts and different emotional releases, a different like meditational emotional releases as well. My favorite one though is bringing ceremony and ritual to people, because in a non-religious context, that's not often spoken of necessarily often. You know, if we look at, I think I mentioned something like this briefly earlier, but if we look at funerals or weddings in modern day culture, they're often influenced by some kind of religious context or something, you know? So looking at people who don't necessarily believe in God or have a certain faith that controls their life, or not controls, but like allows their life to, how do you share the tools? Rather, I share the tools to incorporate that into people's lives. And so that looks like, you know, just setting intentional time aside from your daily life. You know, setting an hour or 2 hours or however long you have, it doesn't necessarily need to be that long. And really just, you know, cleaning your space and feeling clean and lighting candles and having a certain scent in the room and having, you know, it doesn't necessarily need to be new age spirituality, but yeah, you can have crystals and rocks, but you can also just have pictures of your loved ones. You can have, you know, an old shirt or anything that feels like an object of comfort. Mm-hmm. And it's really just creating a space of sacredness. And I think that word's not necessarily used enough. People don't realize that all of life is sacred. Mm-hmm. You don't need a priest and like a big church to tell you that something is sacred. All of life is sacred. Right. Human, the fact that I woke up this morning, that in itself is so sacred. That is so exciting. That is something to celebrate. And I don't need my wedding day to be the only day I celebrate and have mm-hmm. a ceremony. I don't need a funeral to be the only time I have a ritual. Ritual is something to incorporate into, you know, everyday life, whether it's a little, not even prayer, but just like a little word before you eat. That in itself is a ritual in a very simple way, but it's just celebrating and thanking and coming to a place of gratitude. And so I take ceremony and ritual into the holistic transformation of grief, because it really just comes into a space of the heart that people don't necessarily come into all that often. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge stepping stone to coming out of the hardness of grief and the misery of grief and all of these confusing emotions that people don't know how to come out of. It's just stepping into a place of acceptance and of heartful beauty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm wondering what you've observed that COVID-19 really has fucked things up in terms of everything that used to happen after death. I know,
which even, is good. We needed that to be fucked up.
Yes, yes.
We needed that to change. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in a way, it's crazy because so many things are changing now in the world because we're all going through it collectively, and death. Now that I'm, you know, talking about it as it's happening all over the place and people are having to deal with, you know, these Zoom funerals and not being able to say goodbye in person. And also I think grief as like a collective, because a lot of people are grieving the loss of routine, of jobs. You know, it's not just actual people that are dying, other things like, it's almost like everything is dying all around us. How do you see, I don't know, like, what are your thoughts on that? Where do you think this is going? Or just whatever comes to mind first, COVID-19 and grief. I want to hear.
COVID-19 and grief. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting because, so I share weekly death cafes. Mm-hmm. And last week I had, so a death cafe, for people listening who don't know, it's basically an open space for people to come together and just have conversations on death and dying. It's basically this podcast, but open to the public. And so last week I held one with the subtitle of Living with Grief. Mm. And it was specifically around that. It was Living with Grief around COVID-19.
Wow.
And it was really interesting. It was the smallest group I've ever had, but it was so beautiful because people were able to go so much more in depth. Mm-hmm. And so I think COVID has created this, I'm a meditation and yoga teacher, so I look at it as in the sense of retreat instead of isolation. Mm. COVID has forced people to come into this sense of forced retreat. Mm. And so to some people, that's great. Some people, you know, especially these people that I was talking to last week, there was one woman, she was flourishing. She was like, you know, it's really allowed me to look deeper and have more time for myself and sort of sit with my own thoughts and emotions so much more. But for others, they're completely lost. And it's the first time that people are really being forced to dive inward. I think that there's been a lot of opportunity in the last many years to dive inward, but when it's forced from an external doing, mm-hmm. it's kind of like a slap in the face to people. So in terms of grief, I think it's been a really important time to come forward if you're a part of this death culture and if you're a part of this whole grieving culture, and really step forward and open more space for people. I know for myself, I've been sharing weekly death cafes just, and like they're free events. I just hold them because people get so much benefit out of them. And I find it such a fascinating space for people to just unleash this immersion, this emotional turmoil that they don't necessarily have anywhere else to put, or to have questions that no one else is asking them, but truly makes them look deeper within their own mind and within their own heart. And similarly, like what you said, people aren't necessarily just grieving the loss of a loved one. They're grieving all things. Mm-hmm. And I'm finding that with the clients I'm working with is some of them have, you know, I have people approaching me at the moment. They're not even necessarily dealing with death per se. They're just dealing with a lot of overwhelming emotion that they just don't know how to sit with. Mm-hmm. So grief is a very general term that I used to think was only really dedicated towards losing somebody, but I'm very quickly realizing is not the case. Moving forward though, I think that COVID has been a blessing in disguise in so many ways. Mm-hmm. And I think in so many ways that we are yet to see for many more years. But within death culture, I think it's been a really great awakening for people because there's so much fear and there's so much anxiety around this illness. And although it is, you know, taking people's lives and that is unfortunate, I think it's making people look at their own morality a lot more. Mm-hmm. And it's waking people up to this fact that, well, shit, my life isn't guaranteed. And, mm-hmm. you know, I could get hit by a bus tomorrow, or mm-hmm. I could, you know, all of my loved ones could, I don't know, really, really crazy ideas. People are starting to come up with this. And I think people are realizing how much fear is around death. And I think within that fear, there's a good portion of people going into the education side, the self-education of, okay, I have this fear, but why? Like, where is that stemmed? And how do I transmute that? And how do I shift the fear into a space of acceptance? And I think that is the start of this whole death revolution that's currently happening. I think, you know, the word revolution is we're re-evolving. We are evolving as human beings. And, you know, the capacity for our minds to intake information has rapidly evolved in the last 100 years with technology. But a lot of customs and ways of doing things haven't really caught up to that. So I think COVID is a really big blessing for everything in that aspect. And I think that, yeah, death is changing. Death culture is changing. Death awareness is changing. I think that home funerals are going to start to be a widely more accepted endeavor. I think, you know, caring for the body at home, mm-hmm. home deaths are going to be a lot more accepted. Green burials are going to be widely more accepted. I know that there's a huge, huge outreach for, we don't have enough green burials here in Canada. There's a few places that are starting to do it, but the capacity that people want green burials, we just don't have the spaces for them yet. So mm-hmm. there's this huge shift happening. And I think a lot of it has been accelerated because of the fear that COVID brings to people, which I am greatly thankful for.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. Me too. It's a weird thing. I mean, everything has like a good and a bad side, or I don't like looking at things in terms of good and bad, but absolutely. You know, there's always a silver lining, and like I always say, this too shall pass. Yeah,
well, even within good and bad, you know, you touched on it briefly, but people see death, sometimes they're instantly brought to the bad, and so I challenge that because it's like, well, why is that bad? Mm-hmm. Bad is just a label that you've put on it, but what makes it inherently bad? Mm-hmm. It's right. Just your perception of it. It's not necessarily, you know, in terms of the laws of the universe, it is not bad.
Right. It's just inevitable. Right. Yeah. It's part of life. Yeah. This conversation has been fire. I love it. Seriously. It was beautiful. So on that note, I'd like to ask you the last two questions that I always ask my guests. Number one is, how would you, if you were to die tomorrow, how would you like to be remembered?
Hopefully as inspiring. I mean, people always ask me this question, but in different narratives. And I always say, well, hopefully people remember me as the person who doesn't care how they're remembered, because I will share enough understanding that perception is uniquely thought of in our own minds. But that's a little bit too philosophical. So I would say hopefully as inspiring, and hopefully as someone who isn't necessarily tied down to the cultural norms and pushes the limits of societal acceptance.
And the second one, if you were to compile all the knowledge and wisdom that you've learned throughout your life into a message, kind of like what we were talking about interviewing people in hospice and nursing homes about, what would that message be?
I feel like the easy way of explaining that would be to quote Timothy Leary and say, turn on, tune in, and drop out. But that's not my message. That's his message. So I would say something along the lines of, don't limit yourself from the reality that you have been convinced to perceive. And as much as possible, try and break through those boundaries, because there is an infinite universe to be explored. And yeah, I really just encourage everyone to try and tap into even just a fraction of mm-hmm. what is possible in life. Mm-hmm. And to speak of death, because that just brings more awareness to life itself.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. It's been beautiful, Bree. Thank you. And how can people find you if they want to get in touch?
People can find me on Facebook. I run a group called Deaf Positive Education, and we hold weekly deaf cafes every Wednesday night. So you can find more information there, or on Instagram at Bree Martell, BREMARTEL.
Awesome. Thank you, Bree.
Thank you so much.
Hope you guys enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, please make sure to subscribe. And if you'd like, leave a review on iTunes or wherever you consume your podcasts. It really helps spread the message. Also, if you'd like to connect with me, follow me on Instagram at Conversations on Death. And I will talk to you guys soon. Take care.